You're listening to Highland Radio. Highland
Radio. The Weekend Edition, brought to you by the Arnold Family Hotel, Dunfanaghy, the idyllic location for family celebrations and conferences overlooking Sheephaven Bay.
Hello and a very good Saturday morning. You're very welcome along to the Weekend Edition here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes. Coming up on the programme, we speak to a Himalayan trekker who's from Falkara. We discuss the success of Donegal's libraries and what were the most popular books throughout the year. Twitter declared selfie the word of the year. We'll discuss that and other social media. The Simon community joins us to discuss a 30% increase in homelessness in the Northwest. That and much more, including your calls and comments. Text the programme 086 77 00 555, or you can call Yvonne right now on 074 91 25000. And if you're on Twitter, you can tweet me directly at Greg Hughes 2. Dahi Ramsey of On Green on Theatre is discussing the news with us. Dahi, you saw firsthand the conditions this morning. Nasty.
I did, Greg, yeah. I saw there's a car in the ditch between Milford and Remelton, just below McAdoo's Corner, not far from my own house. And then when I was coming round by Ballyar, the car in front of me around what's quite a tight corner, when I came round the corner, it was on the other side of the road. Happily, they stayed on the road, you know, but...
Now it's through the gap this morning and it is passable and it's clear, but it's one of those treated roads, so it's just have a bit of caution.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to brake in a hurry.
That's exactly, that's it. Leave plenty of space, but it's just
slow down.
It's one thing about snow, it's there and it's honest, isn't it? You know, you can see it, you know what you're driving on, but the black ice, you go around a corner, you can't see it, and even with the best will in the world, it can catch you out. But anyway, that's a warning just for this morning. Right, Dahi, the papers this week, this day, what's caught your eye first off?
There's actually lots of stories today, which is great, you know. One on the front of the Irish Daily Mail, which, you know, I think in a rural county like Donegal, gives all our hearts a lift. Christmas fuel price bonanza. So the price of fuel going down. It's fantastic. I think, you know, it's been one of those things that hasn't been talked about a lot, I think, over the last few years. Just how much of our income, you know, particularly, as I say, in a rural county, you know, my drive to work and back is probably 30 miles a day. You know, 10 cents on a litre, you know, turns into thousands for me every year. So it's great. The price has fallen and we've seen it at the pumps, you know.
It always comes down slower than it goes up, though.
It does. They always have lots of reasons why this happens. I'm sceptical about them all.
You see, the bottom price is a litre of petrol is around 62 cent a litre. That's how much it costs. Yeah. Now, the balance is made up of tax and VAT and whatever else the government lay on top of it. So if we see a reduction, it's all only on the 62 cent that we're seeing a reduction. Yeah. So people say, well, I don't know what a litre is anything. Well, I don't want to mention the price because it varies so much the closer you get to the border here. But the point I'm making is it's only the 62 that the oil price actually adjust. It's not the entire litre, because obviously tax doesn't fluctuate. Well, it fluctuates up.
It's the speed with which it goes up and goes down that gets to me. You know, if $20 goes on a barrel of oil overnight, they hike up the price at the pumps that day. You know, if it comes down $20, it seems we wait 3 or 4 weeks for it to filter through.
It's so different with airlines, because I know, like, say, the likes of Ryanair, they will bulk buy fuel for a year, maybe 2 years in advance if they think it's a low price, and that's a gamble that they take
on. I think they got caught out, actually, didn't they?
So, but I mean, at the pumps, you know, there are, I mean, it's pretty competitive, but you only have to drive around to save money in this county, as I say. West Donegal, Inishowen, Bundoran, then across along the east border. The variance in price in the one county is shocking. But good to see them coming down, as you say, and hopefully oil heating prices, you know, we're in that time of year where people are having to get the fill every month or what have you.
I did order it during the week.
Did you? Oh, the oil man doesn't like delivering me 50 euro at a time.
Does it?
I don't really. It's a bit higher than 50, but you fill your tank, do you?
No, gosh, nobody fills the tank anymore, do they?
The main road was the same, Greg. We salted other Lifford to Letterkenny Road, that's a very dangerous caller, says. Roads around St. Johnson, an absolute joke. Why are the gritters not out, says another caller. And it's like a skating rink out there in Letterkenny this morning. Looks like ground is wet, but sheer black ice. So listeners, going along with what we've been saying so far, 086 77 00 555. So that's some good news, is to say, oil coming down. Yeah. What else has caught your eye, Danny?
Oil coming down. I suppose there were a few things. I mean, another good story, I suppose, in the Irish Mirror.
Are you all right? Normally you come in here moaning. Someone must have been taking a hand at you,
know,
did they?
I know.
Daddy, you do nothing but moan on that radio station.
I know. AC/DC are playing the Aviva, so that'll be good.
Yeah.
You know, I think exceptionally popular band, I think, you know, and I think everybody likes a bit of AC/DC, you know. They've sneaked onto wedding playlists for DJs and bands now, you know. So,
and that'll be a sellout as soon as the tickets go on sale, will it? It's not my type of music, to be honest with you.
I don't know is a question. I think tickets are slower to sell generally these days, unless, you know, it's a massive, massive act. I mean, Aviva is a lot of tickets, isn't it? But it'll sell out by the time of it, I would be.
And would you be going down?
I don't know if I'll go down. I actually don't like gigs with too many people in them.
Right, okay.
Do you know what I mean? I don't like that huge throng of people, you know, so.
Well, you're not going to get AC/DC and Tom Green on.
No, but it, you know.
But it wouldn't be for the ones to drive.
I might send an email somewhere, you know.
Yeah. You can always ask. Yeah. You get these intimate
gigs.
Well,
no, it's not going to happen. We did have David Gray last year, which I thought was, you know.
That was a coup.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a lot of musicians like playing in, it's not a tiny venue, it's not what you'd call it, I mean, you know, it's a significant venue, but you do get musicians that do like to play in that environment rather than the open air or massive concert, because they like to see sometimes the white in the eyes, you know?
Yeah, it would be described as intimate, really, I suppose, at just under 400 seats.
Well, it's all right for you to say it, I didn't want to say it.
Yeah. No, intimate is the word, and I think it's a positive enough word for it, you know? And I think where we've been lucky over the years is catching people when they're warming up into a big tour. So David Gray wanted to go out, try out the new material, you know, warming up into that. Jack D, the comedian, came for the same reason, around the same time. So sometimes we catch them, we get
exactly
lucky.
Yeah, exactly. That's the great thing, having the facility around. Right, what else is in the papers today? The care home issue that arose during the week. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. I saw aspects of that programme. I wasn't able to watch it because I just wasn't in the frame of mind to be able to watch it. I know that sounds like an incredible bit of weakness because a million people did watch it. Yeah. But suffice to say, the fact that this is going on is an absolute and utter disgrace, that people of an older generation, people with intellectual difficulties, are being treated like that by other human beings, not in the other end of the world, but in our own country. We should hang our heads in shame.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch it, Greg. I just couldn't bring myself to watch it, you know. I am a former care worker, you know. I worked in for the health board in the unit for teenagers taken into care, so slightly different kind of one. And I have to say, I suppose one of the things I think's got lost in the whole thing is there are loads of great care workers out there.
You know,
I know quite a few care workers.
But we always have that. I understand that. And we always have that caveat. It's the same if you try and criticise something in hospitals.
Yeah.
Frontline staff doing the. And I understand that and I respect it. But for once, let's actually talk about the bad people. We've been talking about some awful things that happened in this country over the decades, and people have gone on social media and gone on news programs and they says the way we treated these older people, the way we treated these children in the 60s, 70s, 50s, 40s is an absolute disgrace. This isn't historical. This is now. This is how society in certain instances, even albeit a minority, is treating people now. So this is the scandal of 4 or 5 decades, but it's happening under our watch. Yeah. So are people angry enough about this? Because, you know, there's a lot of things looking for the headlines at the moment, but this seemed like almost a 1 or 2 day story when it shouldn't be. We should be all over this, shouldn't we? And making sure, whatever it takes, that it can never, ever happen again. No?
Obviously, we'd like it not to happen again. I just don't know how you fix it. I mean, it's such a huge system, isn't it? And it feeds into the whole thing of the health boards and where it's at. And
well, you put one manager in every single place that has to report back. The exact same you do in a private company, though. You see, people, when you say things like that, people do tend to come up with what the problems are. We know we have a fair idea what the problems are, but what we need is actually the will to I mean, this is on Taoiseach's county that this happened in. Yeah. The leader of the country.
Yeah, you know? It is shocking. I mean, I see in the papers, I mean, the Mirror has a story that a lot of care home staff are on job bridge, which is hard. It's not really a surprise to say a lot of businesses have used job bridge at this stage, but it certainly, I'm sure, wasn't designed in that way. Although, was it designed? I think, you know, there is a story, I'm trying to think where it is. Oh, it's in the Indo, that the watchdog was misled. Well, that's fairly
by
obvious.
The HSE.
That's fairly obvious, isn't it? You know what I mean? But I mean, you know, if you're told there's an inspection coming, I mean, everybody pulls up their socks, don't they? You know what I mean? That's...
But there were problems highlighted. I mean, HICWA did identify problems in previous visitors in the care home, and they brought that to the attention of the HSE. And the head of HICWA himself has said that the HSE misled them, as you've just outlined there. Now, an investigation is going to take place, but you can't investigate yourself, and that is pretty much what's going to be happening.
And
it's also going to be behind closed doors. Yeah. Why is that investigation into that behind closed doors? It took RTE to tell us it was happening, and we're not going to be privy to the actual investigation into it.
Yeah, it's all pretty shocking, really. I think that's been one of the fights of the last few years, is to get these things done in public, to get it where we actually get the information. I mean, it's been interesting that for a lot of issues over the last 4 or 5 years, it's been the Public Accounts Committee that has brought things into the public eye, the charities issue, for example. And really, they're about spending of public monies, you know, but they've done us a great service, you know. And maybe they can pull this into the public eye, because obviously there is public money going into this. But I think one of the things is, I mean, I'd say all of us have a relative in a care home, or certainly we know friends and family who have relatives in care homes. And I think that's the shocking thing, you know.
Is the shocking thing also that maybe we care too much about ourselves and what affects our lives directly, and we actually care maybe more about how much water is or whether we have to pay for it than we do about how very, very vulnerable older people are being treated. They're having keys rattled in their faces. They're being pinned down. They're being kicked.
Yeah.
They're being dragged around.
I mean, it's horrific, isn't it, you know? I think, for me, it's the same issue. It's the same issue. How is our money being spent by authority? You know, for me, it's exactly the same issue. It feeds into the same thing.
Yeah.
How are they spending our money? And as you say, we need much more transparency of how our money's spent. And, you know, we, the people, for not to use too grandiose a term, but we need more say over how our money's spent. Mm. You know, if we say we would like our money spent, you know, let's take away some of those politicians' expenses and trips to wherever, you know, and let's spend it on care homes, I think, you know, if you ask people that, I think most people would go for it, you know.
086 77 00 555 is the text line, or call us on 074 91 25000. What's next just before the break, Dahi?
I suppose one of the things I've been really enjoying reading, the Daily Mail have it on their page 12 there, is the Ian Bailey trial, which is just unbelievable. I mean, the stuff coming out, if you wrote it as a fiction, people would tell you to go away.
Far-fetched.
They'd be going, that's a fantasy novel. I mean, today they're talking about you know, him jumping up and down on a stick at a crossroads at midnight, which just sounds, you know, and it's been full of this stuff, these kind of revelations. But on a more serious note, I suppose Marie Farrell has been given, a former girlfriend of Ian Bailey, she's been given testimony, and she's basically saying that all the stuff she said that was incriminating about him, she was led by a Garda to do it, you know. And I suppose, when I was reading it, I suppose, you know, the McBrearty case in Donegal started coming into my head. There's a lot of similarities going on with how people are saying things happened now, you know. And I've no idea where this is going and where it's coming out. But the stories are incredible if people want to go and read them.
I know. Just, and then we had her, obviously, she walked out of the witness box.
Yeah.
During the week, because she didn't want to divulge the name of a person that she was with on the morning of the murder.
Yeah.
And then she returned and asked, can I write it on a piece of paper?
Yeah.
As you say, I mean,
of course, she's not in trial. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's one of the things, isn't it?
You know? But when you make allegations against an organisation, then you're open to, you are open then to the cross-examination and everything that goes along with that. Dahi, what's grabbing your eye next?
I suppose in the Irish Sun today on page 3 is that They're saying that the 12 pubs tradition, which only seems to become a tradition a few years ago, is numbered. A fine pun in the tradition of the sun there.
And this is where people go out from the Christmas party or as a group of friends and have a drink, at least one drink in each pub. Why are they saying that that's going out of favour?
They're saying that pubs don't want it. They don't want that type of business, you know. A number of pubs, I saw a list going around on social media there during the week, a list of Dublin pubs, and it was a list of pubs that are not willing to participate in this. But it was very much being circulated in terms of, here's pubs where you're safe from. You know, they don't like it. It's people coming rowdy, drunk. You know, they might start off grand, but, you know, 12 drinks is a lot. Mm. You know, especially if you're walking in between as well, you know.
And it's going to end up on shots, isn't it? I mean, it's not realistic to expect anyone to have 12 pints, I don't think.
You know, I've been in pubs where the people doing the 12 pumps comes in and they come in very noisy. They disturb the atmosphere. They're saying they want to protect their regular customers. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's fair enough.
Okay. 086 77 00 555. You can keep your texts coming in and as it relates to comments as well as the competition on that text line. I think it's a maybe an urban rural divide. I'd say there's quite a lot of places that would welcome the trade, but Dublin can maybe cherry pick a little bit more.
Yeah, maybe so. I think it probably suits your bigger super pubs.
Yeah.
Your small, local, cosy pub, really. You know, there are probably pubs in town you wouldn't even attempt to do the 12 pubs. Or if you did, they'd certainly be in your first two or three.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are ones you're thinking, well, that's where I'll end up.
I just don't think I'll bother. Go on, what's the next?
Yes, yes.
Sounds like a headache to me, literally.
Wouldn't be for me now. I suppose it's been interesting, actually, looking through the papers this morning at how the weather is dealt with across them. And I know it's a subject we've talked about before, you know, in terms of how the media reports the weather. The Indo uses the phrase Arctic weather. Some of the tabloids they're talking about, and they do these wonderful get-out clauses. Maybe the worst weather in 50 years.
Yeah.
It's possible. Well, we all know anything's possible. We also... No, they can't really predict the weather more than 4 or 5
Well, a tabloid is going to dispense with the facts and go with the sensational because, you know, the weather is going to be awful. It's going to be terrible. Whereas you obviously, maybe the broadsheet feels that it's, you know, a little bit like us. I mean, we have to contact Meteorin and represent the weather as it's actually being forecast by the forecasters. Yeah. But I think people lap it up because, as we've talked about before, people love talking about the weather. And if the tabloids say it's as cold as the Arctic Circle or wherever.
Well, I think this is it. I mean, the Indo today using the phrase, this Arctic weather, this is normal Irish weather.
But is it not coming from the Arctic, no? Is it not being blown down?
Maybe it is.
But I'm trying to help them here.
What sense do you get? I mean, it's interesting the Irish Times goes with, you know, this weather has increased the chances of a white Christmas, which seems a much more measured and reasonable kind of story.
So is the calendar, actually, strangely.
You know. Yeah.
That's because we're getting closer to Christmas.
Yes, exactly. I'd like a white Christmas. It'd be nice.
I think everyone does. I think everyone's dream is that the snow comes down on Christmas Eve and then clears off on St. Stephen's Day. That's what everyone would like. Yeah. It doesn't happen like that, does it?
I wouldn't mind a few days of it, you know. Although, I suppose I'll have to be out and about as well. But the Irish Times, page 9, they have the possibility of another teacher strike.
Yeah, well, it's scheduled. It's January 22nd, isn't it?
Yeah, and I must say, even though, I mean, my daughter Megan's doing her junior cert this year, I'm fully in favour of the teachers in this one. I'm 100% behind the teachers.
You don't think the teachers... the crux of this is that the teachers don't want to be marking their own students' papers. They think that it's open. Well, they think that there's many reasons as to why not. But
well, the reason I'm behind it is because bias has to come into it. Mm. You know, we all went through school. We all had teachers who didn't like us. Hopefully we had one or two who did. And the difference in how we were marked by those teachers was... I mean, I remember, you know... English from one year to the next, you know, being up in the 70s, 80s one year and down in the 40s the next year and then back up to, you know, 60 or whatever the next year. And you're going, it's not me, it's not my abilities in English here, you know. So I think teachers quite rightly
recognise that. Is that not a slight against the professionalism of teachers, though, that they can't, they're incapable of being dispassionate enough to be able to mark... Fairly.
I think all human beings are incapable. I don't think it's a slight on teachers at all. We all use our prejudice, our bias all day, every day. You know, I think it's a normal thing. And I think the teachers quite rightly recognise that. Mm. And they'd like as fair a system as possible out there. And I'd like a fair system for my kids coming through.
So if it isn't broken, you know, don't fix it, effectively.
Well, I'm not saying the current system's perfect.
Yeah, but as it relates to the, you know, external marking of these papers, external assessment, I mean, that's what they're here for.
Yeah, I think the only... one of the things I think it is, it'll put huge... I mean, there's a lot of pressure on teachers anyway these days. And I think it'll put even more pressure on teachers because we'll all have to become pushy parents. Mm. You know, if we see parent pushing the teacher to get their kid up from a C to a B or a D to a C, you know, I'll feel honour bound. I'll be letting my child down if I'm not in there pushing for those extra couple of marks, arguing for them, you know. So, you know, from one or two maybe pushy parents in a class,
it's going to be interesting because the Minister for Education, she's very firm on this. You know, she says I've reduced it from 100% down to 40%. The teachers' unions seem resolute. They're taking these days off. Yeah. They're not getting paid for it. You know, I've been facetious in the past, joking that maybe it's handy to get some January shopping or whatever. But in fairness, they're on the pickets in a rotation. You know, so. It's something they obviously feel very passionate about, and it's a very, you know, it's like not like a day off for them, put it like that.
Well, nobody's looking to lose pay. I mean, I've spoken to a number of teachers, and they were all bemoaning the loss of a day's pay coming up to December or coming up to Christmas. Mm. But at the same time, they were all like, it's worth it if we get this sorted. They recognise, you know, that there is, you know, certain biases, as I say, that creep into all human beings in our dealings, and they'd like to take that out, and, you know. I think they're right.
All right, well, we'll see how that pans out. There's another strike January 22nd, and then there's a possibility of a third if there's no movement on it. Clock's catching up on us. What are we going to squeeze in now, Dahi?
Okay. There's a classically Irish story, I think, in the Irish Times on page 6 of a couple who will be paying a legal bill up to 100,000. Over a foot of a hedge.
How much is it again? A legal bill of...
Up to 100,000 was what they were talking about, you know, in the Irish Times. And it's basically over access to cut their hedge. It seems to be on a lane, you know. And it's the field all over again, isn't it? John B. Keane's classic play and film. You know, it's that bit of...
The judge had said previously in the case, no one's going to win here. Go out, see if you can come up with some resolution between yourselves.
Yeah.
It's not really a matter of the courts. And it just rumbled on and on.
Ended up in the High Court.
It's a caravan park and a neighbouring house. And the caravan park widened the entrance somewhat.
They did. They widened
feet,
their lane.
And then it ended up in the courts between the caravan park owners and the residents. Yeah. The outcome of it being that the judge found in favour of the
caravan park.
And legal costs.
To the other couple, in favour of the caravan park completely, I suppose the other crowd have to pay the legal bills. But the interesting thing was, the judge was saying was, yes, they widened the lane, you're right, but they widened it on their own land, so, you know, there's no issue there.
Resolution, and you know, when we have when Seamus Gunn is in, obviously he comes in regularly on Sean's show here in Highland, but in a lot of the cases, you know, he's also saying you need to try and sort this out, resolve it before it gets to that stage, because there's no winners in that situation. But in this case, you know, the caravan park owners, if they actually get there, I mean, it'll have to be determined if the other group have the resources to pay back the legal charges, but still. And the judge made, I think he also referenced the field in his
he did indeed,
he said it would be, if it was in the field, you wouldn't believe it.
Again, I mean, it's a bit like the Ian Bailey case again. As I say, some of the, you know, the details coming out, you're just like, you know, it was a truth stranger than fiction, isn't that the thing,
right.
You know,
anything else you want to squeeze in?
Not a huge amount more. I'd just like to say that my children said I misrepresented them last time I was on.
In what way? I think you were very fair to them.
Apparently I got their belts wrong in their martial arts. Oh. So Megan is a purple white in karate and Dara's a purple in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
How did you make that mistake?
You know yourself.
No, I don't.
They get belts. No. They go along. You know, it's a number of years.
I don't think you've done enough to redeem yourself there.
No. Well, can I just say happy birthday to Megan then? She's 15. So.
You've done it now. And that's Megan's doing the Leaving Cert Cycle.
Junior Cert Cycle.
Sorry, she gets a day off in January unless adults can get their heads together and sort this mess out.
Yeah, and as I say, I'll be supporting the teachers in taking that day off.
Okay, it must be cold, Greg, says Jim. I've just seen a politician with hands in his own pockets.
Very good. It's okay, he's putting in an expenses.
And slightly more seriously, a caller says, the parents should have a day of protest as well as the teachers, and maybe the Department of Education might change their minds. So a caller saying there, maybe the parents should get on the picket line with the teachers, and maybe that will be the catalyst for change within government.
Let's see what the weather is going to be like, Greg, to be honest.
Well, look, there were 5 million people in the streets of Dublin on Wednesday in terrible conditions.
Do you know, here's one. The obsession with the numbers on the streets,
because
I thought, was such a side issue.
That's how you judge it, you see.
Loads. There was loads. We've seen the photos.
Yeah, but
we've
according
seen the footage,
to the government, there was loads. There was four, maybe five, possibly six.
Yeah.
There was 70,000 Gardaí.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
But I think the numbers are relevant. Loads came out on a Wednesday in on a cold day.
The government were waiting to see what type of people turned out. I think that's what they were. Were it lefties? You know, was it Sinn Féin supporters? Yeah. You know, there hasn't been so many hijackings in Dublin in a long time because that protest was hijacked by a lot of people. Or was it your Fine Gael, potential Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil voters, was it your middle, you know, and I think that's
And it's interesting that I saw on somebody's Facebook this morning somebody talking about, it was actually a doctor talking about why they marched, and that's got to scare Fine Gael, you know.
Well, and Kelly's not for changing.
Ah, sure, they're never for changing until they are.
Okay, Dahi Ramsey, thank you so much for coming in. Dahi Ramsey of On Green on Theatre. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Arnold's Family Hotel Dunfanaghy, the ideal venue for family occasions. Meet and greet family and friends in the cosy Glenveagh Room by the open fire before your private dining experience in Seascape's restaurant. To book, call Arnold's Hotel Dunfanaghy 913-6208.
Okay, next up on the programme, we are talking at social media, and more specifically Twitter. Twitter has named selfie the word of the year. Some people love them, some people loathe them. To discuss that and other issues, Eamon Dillon, Sunday World journalist, joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Eamon.
How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. Are you for or against selfies?
Oh, well, I have to admit I was guilty of one or two there. We had our Christmas party last Tuesday. So I'm afraid they did it, and they became part of the debrief the next day, all right.
We're certainly going to have to dig them up and put them on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. But, lots of people are. The selfie has really driven, and pictures in general, has really driven the growth of social media, and I suppose most recently Instagram.
Yeah, although kind of Instagram is what they call it's a bit of a walled garden that people go into Instagram and they don't come out again. Whereas kind of sites like Twitter and Facebook, when people engage with that, they also kind of click on other links and go to other places and have a look around. But certainly, I mean, it was Ellen DeGeneres started this year on Twitter with her great picture from the Oscars. And I think what people like about it is kind of the immediacy, kind of access to celebrity and so on that, you know, you can follow directly. And as well as that, then from the other side, the celebs can, you know, they feel they can communicate directly and they're not having to go through, you know, celebrity magazines or through agents or PR people, that they can put out the message they want as well. So I think people are kind of, they're getting the best of both worlds, or the worst of both worlds in some cases.
But that's it. They are controlling their PR to some extent, aren't they? Because as you've pointed out there, you know, if an unsavory article, not that it would ever appear in your paper, of course, but if an unsavory article were to come out on a Sunday, someone in the public eye can instantly contradict it or give their side of it. And that also feeds the people that need to get closer to their idols.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think like some of the celebrities, I mean, certainly people like Niall Horan are great. I mean, they put out a ton of stuff. I mean, during the year, I think there was problems with fans in hotels or in fields at the back of the hotel in Australia. And security people were trying to stop the fans coming in because they were genuinely worried about crocodiles attacking them. And they were able to go on Twitter and tell their fans, like, you know, to back off, to, you know, to be careful. But as well as that, you know, they're you know, I personally think it's been a great force for good. It's a lot of people have been able to, you know, raise various issues, you know, from everything from, you know, just charity donations. I mean, when you look at the way the Ice Book Challenge went, you know, it's a form of it's a long form of the selfie, I guess, isn't it? That was on Facebook. I mean, you do have people taking pictures of their breakfast and pictures of the banana they're about to have for lunch, but I mean, that I don't think that's representative. And you often hear people who don't understand social media will say, oh, what do I want to be looking at somebody's, what they're having for lunch for?
But it's a very good question.
It's a lot more than that. It is a lot more than that. Well, it depends. Like, if you're a celebrity chef, there might be a reason why you're tweeting pictures.
True. Is there a danger, though, that the likes of that and the celeb use of the Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, to perhaps to a slightly lesser extent, could destroy the mediums? Because as we've seen with the water protests and other very serious issues nationally and internationally this year, Twitter particularly has been really at the forefront of that. But if that's what you're interested in, there's a lot of noise there. If you're only interested in celebs, there's a lot of noise there, especially when things have been slipped into your timeline that you're not necessarily interested in.
Yeah, and I mean, and it is something that it's easy to fall for hoaxes. I mean, I don't know how many kind of fake RIP notices went out for different celebrities this year, only for them to come on and say, you know, actually, I'm not dead. You know, and that happens, and that is one of the downsides. But again, the fact that the social media is there for them to immediately counter those rumours is good as well. I mean, it's certainly a challenge for kind of what they, I suppose, the mainstream media like the Sunday World or, I mean, our own SundayWorld.com. I mean, the challenge for us is to remain relevant. But, I think kind of Twitter and Facebook are great tools that are an aid to a lot of journalists.
Do you think, though, we've reached the balance? Have we learned the balance? Particularly, I think it's a problem. It's a problem for radio, but also for written media. In what do you release for free on Twitter or on the website? Do you have a subscription? What do you put in the paper? Have we got that balance right yet, do you think, or has anyone got it right yet?
No, I don't think so. I think this kind of generation of, you know, certainly people up to the age of, you know, early 30s have grown up pretty much used to consuming their news and celebrity news for free. I mean, Netflix, I guess, has shown a kind of a way forward in that they're offering great movies and TV series, you know, for as little as $6.99 a month. I mean, certainly the balance isn't there yet. I mean, it's been tricky for legacy media, as we're sometimes known, but it has been tricky for mainstream media. But the thing is, I think because, as you mentioned, there's so much noise that people are getting to the point where, oh, they need to go to a brand that they can trust or where they know what they're going to get has been vetted by professional journalists. Not to say that you can't be a professional journalist unless you've worked in the Sunday World.
I know where you're getting to, and that's where the problem is, because as soon as you start sort of defending the industry to some extent, it's almost like you're criticising others, and that's not really the case. It's the balance and having the space for everyone. And it's funny how things changed this year. We had the BBC Music Awards during the week. For the first time, a lot of the exception speeches were, thank you if you've watched my music on YouTube. Not an awful lot of money for musicians for that. Thank you very much if you streamed it. Obviously, Spotify, not a great deal of money in that. Those are the first things that I mentioned, rather than thanks for going out and buying my physical CD. So it's right across the board, isn't it?
Yeah, and even more so that there's a whole slew of well-known celebrities on YouTube, people who have, you know, grown up doing comedy shows, their own kind of take on the world, their own makeup tips, and you know, they'll be well known to younger Irish people, but not necessarily to people of my generation. Certainly, I mean, my youngster, you know, is big into his Xbox and is able to rhyme off all the different top Call of Duty players. And I was looking them up. Some of these guys are multimillionaires at the age of 21 from all their YouTube hits, from the advertising they're generating on that, from showing other kids basically, and you know, how to play Call of Duty, how to do your trick shots, and you know, and get into your league play and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's a whole new kind of form of media in that sense.
Excellent. Now I know it's probably your young fella that's quick scoping me all the time.
But, there you go.
But what do you see for 2015 then? I mean, we've seen Instagram overtake Twitter in the last few weeks. I don't know, some people critical of Facebook that it's just about moaning and pictures of cats and dogs. What do you see the trend for 2015?
Well, I think in Ireland people have been relatively slow to adapt to some of the newer social media sites. I mean, we're pretty much stuck with Facebook. I mean, it's 60%, I think, in Ireland, and 30% on Twitter, and then you're down at the single percentages for Pinterest and you know, the likes of Instagram in Ireland. I mean, it's kind of put it this way, if I could predict what the big social media trend was going to be next year, I would probably be working for my own large social media company.
And I'd be buying shares in it. Exactly. And maybe that's because it's so fluid. Maybe that's what's so interesting. Listen, Eamon, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the programme.
The Weekend Edition, brought to you by the Arnold Family Hotel, Dunfanaghy, the idyllic location for family celebrations and conferences overlooking Sheephaven Bay.